Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. As the summer comes to a close and Britain finally gets some spectacular weather, we gather in dark rooms across the world to talk about TV and what's on it.
It's delightful in London.
It's delightful here as well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you know, we get good weather up here too, Matt.
What did you say then? What are you talking about?
We're talking about your dark room, your dark bedroom.
As the summer gets great, we all move indoors to record this.
He
was trying to be poetic.
It was Matthew. Poetic. Matt's ruined it. We've not even got to the end of the first little musical bit, and Matt has already annoyed me. Let's move on. That's Mel. You can hear laughing there. Mel is in Kansas. Let's introduce everyone. Matt's there. You've already met him. He's a hemorrhoid in London. Jack is a young, naive, jester type character that lives up in the north. Hiya, Jack. Are you all right?
I'm in Lancaster where it's raining.
So it's not, is it?
Thanks for depressing me even more.
You're only about an hour and a half further north than you. I'm sorry, Jack.
I know.
Jamie, my regular co-host, of course, but Mel joins us from Kansas, and Mel has just woken up from a deep, deep sleep. Literally, she set her alarm for this podcast. What time is it there, Mel?
It's 1:35 p.m.
P.M. Okay, PM. So why are you having a nap? Is it siesta time?
Very much so. I had to get up at the crack of dawn to go substitute on the very first day of school here in my small town in Kansas. I was not expecting to be called out. And I did not think quickly enough of an excuse to not be there. So,
Jamie, there she needs training. Jamie's always got an excuse ready.
Jamie, what are my excuses? Can I just write them down and keep them by the
way? Yeah, some sort of dysentery always goes down a treat.
Definitely.
Because no one really wants to investigate any further.
Sure.
That's it. Yeah. Always go with the bum. Mel, what age were you teaching and what class was it today?
I had sophomores in high school, so the little hooligans are about 15, and it was chemistry.
That's like a terrible combination, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, we actually had a good time. It was the first day of school, so they were very energetic. I've subbed for 4 years, and I've had several of them when they were in middle school, and they saw me come in, and there were some groans because they knew they wouldn't be able to get away with much.
And how many episodes of Chuck can you get into one lesson?
You know, I was not able to show them Chuck. We had to go through proper procedures and check out the Chromebooks and go to an assembly and learn the fight song. And
let's learn the fight song.
The fight.
Fight song. What's the fight song?
That's what you sing when your sports team is playing.
Really?
Where is your school spirit, Howell?
Mel, what is it? Will you do it for us?
Come on, Mel, come on.
Let me try to remember.
We won't
laugh. It's been a long time since I was actually in high school.
You just learned today, Mel.
Go Emporia, go Emporia, something, something, yay! I don't know.
That was brilliant. Well done.
Something there about any sort of any sport will win the day. I don't know.
I love it.
Yeah. Brilliant. And then, you know, you rah, rah, rah.
Really strong.
It's brilliant. Clever. Yes, it's award-winning work here.
Okay, let's gather. Last week on this podcast, we talked about the epic, incredible Stranger Things, if you haven't watched it yet, or watch it. The guinea pig on last week's show, well, it was partly supposed to be me, but I couldn't stop watching it. The other person it was supposed to be was Jack. He didn't turn up.
No.
So we're going to get to Jack in a bit, but also Matt Wanless has been making waves off air in between these two podcasts with his controversial opinion of Winona Ryder, saying that he didn't think that her performance was connected correctly. And this is the connection between her brain, her heart, and her child in the piece was not convincing enough for Matt.
No, no, that's not what I said.
Oh, what was it?
I was talking about it in terms of generalized emotions. That's what I was saying.
That's what I just said. So the connection between her and her child wasn't convincing to you.
That was a side note. I was talking about her just playing a state rather than a specific thing.
Now, have you had chance yet to listen to the Justin Lee Collins part of the podcast last week, or do you just fast forward to your bits?
I don't listen to anything anyone else says in the podcast.
There we go.
I just hover my cursor over the over the little scribbling thing, and I just go, is that me? I've got a little program that seeks out my voice, and I just sit there in a bath of milk.
Yeah.
With a cigar, and I listen to it.
It is the smoothest.
I slowly masturbate.
Silky.
Why do you do it slowly?
Yeah, why slow?
Because...
Oh, it's the water.
Anything that good is best savoured.
Oh, God.
So, so Mel, make sure you pass this podcast on to your students.
Yes,
Mel. Mel, will you fill Matt in? We just want to touch on this. Fill Matt in on what Justin Lee Collins was saying about John Hughes' adult characters, just to see if this is another. You know, is there a crack in Matt's? Does Matt question his opinion at all, faced with this knowledge?
You want me to fill him in on that?
Yeah, you fill him in, because I always have to edit this podcast, and I really get sick of the sound of my own voice. You all understand that.
Try listening to it in a bath of milk.
Oh! Really, really.
I'm sorry, I don't remember what he said.
He said it is John Hughes, isn't it, the 80s director? Yeah.
Yeah.
He said that in those films, one of the things that were different were that the adult characters had to annoy you as the audience. That was one of the things that helps you see the world through the kids' eyes and enjoy the film through the kids' eyes. So every adult character in it, you should have subconsciously and perhaps consciously had an issue with. Now, my point is, with all of those characters, like the lazy dad, the mum who was a bit oppressive, the teacher who was a bit geeky, with the Hopper who was a bit useless at the beginning, with all those characters, it's fairly easy to play slightly annoying. But if you're playing the mum who loses a child, that's a very difficult thing to do, to both act the distress but also not let the audience empathize with you too much. That's a really difficult brief for that job. Could it be that, and it seems likely that that is the kind of direction they were given, could it be that gives you friction and you're overcritical because it's Winona Ryder or because it's the main part? Could it be that, Matt? Could it?
Yes.
Wow, our work here is done. Thank you for joining us this evening. We'll see you next week. Right. Well,
no, I remember that discussion now. Yes. And one of the things that came to mind when I was listening to that was Nancy and Mike's father, who is the quintessential useless father.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was interesting when you mentioned that, I thought of the film War Games. Do you remember that film?
Yes. Great film. Matthew Broderick.
Yeah. I love that film. And it made me think of the dad in that. Just really bumbling and doesn't know what's going on at all. And I get what you're talking about.
Mm, difficult. Well, listen, that brings us on to what is... I thought that was going to be contentious. This is going to be even worse. So much so that I can't engage this person in a conversation. Jamie, you're going to have to take over. Will you please talk to Jack about Stranger Things?
Right, so I don't know the ins and outs of your thought process, Jack, but from what I'm hearing, you've not enjoyed watching Stranger Things. Would you discuss, please?
Well, overall, after watching it completely now, I'd probably give it an 8.5 out of 10.
But what did you give it after one episode?
Oh, after one episode, I really didn't like it, just because of the 80s. Well, I'll give you an example. So Mike would be sat there in the basement, and he'd say, 11. She's got special powers. And as he would be saying that in the background, you just hear bum ba bum bum ba bum bum ba bum bum. And the 80s references and everything about it, I didn't really like at first.
Why is that 80s?
It was just the music, the cheesiness of it. It just sort of turned me off at first.
Right.
But then towards the end, the whole childish enthusiasm of it, I absolutely loved and thought it was brilliant. But then one thing that I really didn't like about it that I thought almost spoilt it for me was the it's a bit of a spoiler.
Can you talk about it without talking about it?
The love interest at the end.
I get you.
It spoiled it for me. It soured the water.
Do you think it happened really? Too quickly?
I just don't think it was needed at all, really.
Because, Jack, you've pulled something out of the bag there that I'd forgotten about. I did actually have a criticism of that, which was in the people that we're talking about, the prom is mentioned, right?
Yeah.
And they recall that line about 20 minutes later. And that really they should have set that up two episodes earlier if they were going to do like a recall line where we remember back to something and get flooded with emotion. It seemed to be a very insular episode like that. Maybe with different writers of different episodes, they didn't quite manage to sort of get that implanted early enough. But I do understand it felt like perhaps that came quite quickly and perhaps quite. I don't know. How old are
you?
It
almost came as
a bit of
a shock, really, for me. I didn't think they would go that way with them. So I thought they'd become such good friends throughout the series. I didn't expect that to happen.
Was it necessary, Matt?
I didn't mind it, but it does make me think. Like the whole story arc with the original love interest.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about this with some other people earlier this week. Is that story arc is entirely superfluous? It does nothing.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's one of the only things I can think of that is a weak point about the show.
So,
did you feel like that character's storyline was a setup for season two? That's
possibly.
Kind of how I kept
possibly.
Feeling it for the whole thing.
Yeah.
I was like, why is this person here?
Which do you
is
mean,
this
Mel?
In service
you,
of the
you mean the first?
The original.
The original one, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that in service of a possible season two?
Could
maybe?
Be, but I thought that's what. I thought that's what Matt was about to imply with the one that Jack's talking about, is that there would be. We know that very little in this thing is done without reason, and that thing that Jack's criticizing. It would make sense if that's the very beginning of a story, wouldn't it? That's a good sign for what may be to come, what with the origin story idea.
Yeah, but that was another thing that I agreed with you last week, that I didn't really like the season two hints towards the end.
Okay.
The forest scene and the monster toilet bathroom scene as well. I didn't think they were either one or the other. I didn't think both were needed.
I loved that final scene. Actually, both of them. We're still talking about them.
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah, I kind of feel like you want to... I like the set up the next series because I want to know that it's not just a isolated story. I want to know that it's going somewhere and it's got an...
Well, you want to know that.
An aim.
You want to know that as a subscriber of Netflix, but they could have begun the second series with it. Like... That could be the one point in which it doesn't feel like a Spielberg film because E.T. doesn't end with a cliffhanger.
No, I get what you're saying, but I think Tiernan did hit the nail on the head when he said that it was like a lot of that kind of thing where it's a sort of spooky kind of feel.
Yeah.
Like it made me think of the end of Carrie. And I think I didn't think there was any harm in it at all.
So I feel like we're looking. I feel like we've got a really nice pair of pants, and we're picking away at the threads of these beautiful pants.
Well, maybe,
here.
But Jack,
let's just wear them.
Jack, would you have taken the pants off and burned them completely after episode one?
I think if I hadn't have had the encouragement of everybody else saying this is amazing after episode one, I probably would have left it longer before going back to it. I think I would have gone back to it eventually, but I don't think I'd have rushed back to it in the haste that I did.
I just want to make sure, Jack, that you're not saying anything to impress us.
Oh, no,
we're
no.
not going to think less of you if you bloody hated it. And
No. It's just the 80s cheesiness of it.
Yeah, I mean, I get the feeling, because of your age, Jack, do you think because you were a child of the 90s...
Yeah, I think that's exactly it.
...you have a certain degree of spite towards the 80s, would you say?
That should be us.
Because the 80s were so much better.
Yeah. Exactly.
Surely we should be the ones who are embarrassed by the 80s, because we lived
No,
it.
We've got the nostalgia. What are you talking
and
about?
And yet we're not.
I was embarrassed for a few years about it.
It's interesting that Jack had that reaction, because I was actually talking to one of the girls in class today, who, you know, 15-year-old, and she watched it, and after the first episode, she wasn't sure she wanted to continue because of the 80s references. She was finding them a little too much. But then she decided to, you know, press on, and from episode two, I mean, I guess she watched the rest of it in one sitting.
Wow.
But, yeah, because I wonder if, like, we flipped it a little bit and say that there was a show that I referenced loads of 70s TV and film, if maybe we wouldn't have invested so quickly in the journey because we didn't have that nostalgia factor.
Well, we thought maybe,
but I think we're being children of the 80s, obviously better than the children of the 90s. I think we've got a quicker grasp of exterior cultures, and that maybe things that aren't necessarily of a norm to us can still be fascinating in a very formidable way.
Yeah, not Oasis versus Blur, Jack.
Exactly.
Jesus. It definitely proves one thing, that what we thought was an ironclad, if anyone watches episode one, it's another bit of proof that the 4-episode rule is necessary. A style can put people off, and we obviously brought a lot to this. Has anybody watched any of the other new Netflix things, The Get Down?
No, and I'll tell you the truth, I was put off by the trailer, and I genuinely didn't like the trailer.
Because there aren't any white people in it.
I think that's a joke. I think that with Baz Luhrmann, I can either really enjoy it or I can genuinely hate it. It's either one or the other. And from the trailer, I felt like I was going to hate it, but I might be wrong.
Is this the one that's very kind of Soul Train-y?
Yeah.
I've watched the first episode of that, and I actually really, really enjoyed it.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
It's brilliant. And the soundtrack is amazing.
It's meaty, it's complex, it's authentic whilst also being very musical like at points. It's like it's another brilliantly new thing, and I urge you to watch it. We need to do it in the future. It's really good, and it really is refreshing to see something which has got one white person in it. That is really nice. You don't need a main part, even The Wire, you know, your main team of white cops. It's just brilliant. It's everything Bronx 70s funk meets hip-hop, and then the birth of hip-hop. It's great. And on the subject of minorities, there's one more thing to deal with this week before we get on to Fargo, which is this. Jamie Atherton, subconsciously, is a sexist pig.
Okay.
On Sunday, I went to
watch more.
The Ghostbusters with my sister, because she wanted to go for her birthday. So we went to watch Ghostbusters. I enjoyed it so much that I went again that day with my wife, who hadn't seen it and was working that day. So I watched Ghostbusters twice in one day. I thought it was brilliant. Jamie, what are you on about? I laughed beginning to end both times in the same places, laughed all the way through. I thought that it did exactly what the first one did. It gets it just does exactly the same thing as the first one. So we
what
now
are you
know
on about?
My wife, my sister, my brother, my sister-in-law, your wife, Jamie, loved it. What? Yeah. What is wrong with you?
I'll tell you something. This weekend I went to watch Finding Dory at the cinema.
Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it?
Which is one of the... And watching that was like... It was so nice to watch a brilliant comedy that was moving. Yeah. I genuinely teared up when But the journey was amazing and the characters are well-crafted. Yeah. And Ghostbusters was just full of like... The Ghostbusters was just, it was full of these one line sort of quirky little comments with no real character, real journey. The original was brilliant because you had these wonderful characters like Peter Venkman and Egon. I mean, they were so interesting. This was like a poor imitation of that.
No, it wasn't. It was a different.
It was a different interpretation
of it. And it's brilliant. And I'll tell you what I think it is. I think that we've got used to male comedy, where male comedy parts are really clear. You have, a bit like you were just shouting about that, you have people, you have characters who are clearly the stupid one, the smart one, the fit one, whatever. With women, I think, were like Tina Fey's stuff when she did Sisters and stuff, that... Their comedy, when women make it and are allowed to make it, is more complex. You'll have a character like when my wife is funny.
This isn't my wife. What are you on about? I love female. Some of the brilliant. I love Sisters.
What's wrong with you? This was brilliant.
I love the comedy of Amy Schumer. I think the best comedies of last year were mainly female-led comedies. This was not funny.
Helen,
I don't know why.
Helen from Empire Magazine, who's been on this podcast a lot, wrote a brilliant article about it, saying how great it was. So me, Helen, your wife, my wife, Johnny, Tanya, Bethan, everyone I know who has seen it, who's actually seen it, thinks it's brilliant. What happened to you in that cinema?
Well, let us go now. Let's go now to IMDb.
No,
should we
because
go
it's
now?
Full of
no,
nasty no. men
let's,
going they should never
okay,
have made
okay.
this.
Let's go to Rotten Tomatoes.
Again, it's
show.
Full
let's
of nasty, grumpy men. Do you know what Radio 1's film reviewer said? Radio 1's film reviewer said, Helmsworth is the best thing in this film. That how can that not be subconsciously sexist when that part is just?
I think you're reading sexism into it because people didn't like the film.
It's
I am not being sexist because I didn't like the film. I just didn't like the film.
Well, I don't think you are sexist. I just think that. Well, not consciously. I just think that. I can't understand.
So what you're saying is any film with women lead characters that we don't like, we're being sexist for not liking
no,
it.
No, that's your comment. No, I think
that's
that
what
Ghost...
I was gonna
say. No, I don't think that. I think that Ghostbusters.
What if I finally go see it and I don't like it?
I would love love to hear you say that, Mel. Go and watch it.
I'm going to try to watch it this weekend. We'll see. Oh, I can't. My theater's actually being renovated, so.
It's it's scary. It's exciting. The special effects are brilliant. The music's great. The plot's great.
The best thing about it, the special effects and the action scenes are good. It's just not funny.
It's so funny. All the way through. Laughed all the way through. I don't get it. I've never... Everybody walked out of that cinema and went, what's wrong with Jamie? I can't, like...
Even people who hadn't met him.
Yeah. The whole cinema was full. When you went, was the cinema full of people laughing?
There was a few titters. Lauren was laughing.
And what's wrong with your wife, then? She got bad taste?
No, I genuinely don't know what it is that I disagree with probably most people on this.
No,
sometimes
you don't.
That
you agree
happens
with,
in life.
You agree with an absolute shit ton of really angry men on IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes.
I don't think that that's the only people. That I think there are people. I think there are people who don't like this film. Who aren't sexist. I think it's just some people don't find it that funny. I'm one of those people. I can't agree with you on everything. I'm sorry, but I am not sexist.
Well, that sounds like a sexist person to me. Well, I urge everyone, if you can find a cinema that's still showing it after all the bloody users have destroyed it, I urge
you. If you're going to watch it, I've missed it completely. I really would like to see it.
If you're going to watch a film, watch Finding Dory. That is a film.
I urge you to watch both.
Piece of work. That's a piece of work, all right. You've got to watch it.
Well, I do genuinely think that there is something about... because Zoolander, last time I was on here talking about a comedy, Zoolander 2 is the other one that's now in the same basket as having tanked. And there's nothing sexist about that. But I do think that there is something about characters that are complex and silly at the same time. I don't go down well with the audience. I think Finding Dory is a good example of, you know, if you have comic characters in things, they tend to be very clearly there to serve one function. And I wonder if there's something in that. I'm not sure. But anyway, I just...
Are you saying the Finding Dory characters aren't as complex as the characters in Ghostbusters?
No, I'm saying the comic characters in it. So like Ty Burrell's character, for example, it's very, very simple. What he is, what he's there to do. He's a dolphin that has lost his power to use sonar and then tries to get it back. And
I don't think there's that much more thought into the Ghostbusters characters, Howell. I really don't. What's the complexity of...
I thought he was a baby beluga whale.
Yeah, he isn't even a dolphin.
Whatever he is, beluga whale. No, I'm talking about the complexity of the performances. So, like... this is Saturday Night Live people who are playing characters and are being silly. All of a sudden, one of them might sing a song, and the next minute they might do something else that's funny. They don't do exactly what you expect all the time, and that's my experience of My Wife, for example. Rather than guy walks in, we know that his job is to slip on a banana, and that's what his function is. Ty Burrell does this. I just wonder whether a more silly, improvised world like Zoolander and like that just isn't as popular as it should be. I think I'll be interested to know what you think when you watch it a second time. Forget the sexism thing. I don't think it's sexist. I just wonder whether you carried so much more baggage in terms of Ghostbusters than Lauren did. And whether that...
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah.
You certainly lowered my expectations to the point that I wasn't expecting anything, and therefore I just, like, right from the off, found it very, very funny. That was really good. Anyway.
Can we talk about Fargo?
Let's talk Fargo.
Well, I don't know. Let's go for another half hour.
Yeah, that is half an hour. Sorry about that. So, Fargo then. Who shall set it up? Mel? Matt? Mel? Who wants to set it up?
You go for it, Mel.
Mel, what is this? Give us the context. Where are we?
Fargo does not actually open in Fargo. It's actually in Bemidji, Minnesota, in the depths of winter, which is miserable in Minnesota. And it's about the quiet, desperate decline of a very sad man.
Okay, good.
And there's a lot of murder.
And snow.
And bullying. And awful, awful characters.
And this is, as with Ghostbusters, this is a reimagining of an original, which was done by the Coen brothers, famously.
Well, it's not a reimagining. It's kind of, it's in the same world as, it's not like, it actually references that, the storyline from the film in it, doesn't it? So,
yeah.
It's, does it?
Yeah.
Is that later? I didn't notice any references to it.
No, it all kind of fits in at some point.
Sort of.
Later.
No, only sort of, though. It's not like the same ending or anything.
No, but
so
it
this
links...
is another caper that took place in the northern states of America.
It's a re...
Minnesota.
I think I was
or North
right.
Dakota or whatever, yeah.
I think we're both right. It is a kind of reimagining of the... It's almost like the same starting point with lots of aspects that are the same. But you're not going to get the same payoffs and the same characters. So there are very similar characters. There's certain things that are exactly the same, but it's a different thing.
I don't think that's true. I think what Jamie said is far more accurate.
What did yeah, you, no, it's definitely linked to the original film. There is a link, there is a connection between the original film, not just the places, but the actual story. There is a connection to that and what happened in the first series.
What? So
it's not a reimagining. It acknowledges the other story.
Yeah, it acknowledges the other story at some point. You might have forgotten it, Howell. I don't know.
I remember somebody doing something the same as in the film.
No, something happened that is connected to what happened in the film.
Was it a significant act, Howell, or was it just like driving a car, drinking some coffee?
In my head, they did the same. Somebody does the exact same thing as in the first one at some point, but
I can't tell you what it is because it would ruin it for.
Well, it's put it this way: it's not the same as the film. It's definitely in the same world. It has the same feel. The Coen brothers have executive produced it, and they start with their infamous the following is based on a true story, which is bollocks. It's not a true story. Famously, I think a Japanese person died when they went there to search for something that happens in the film. They went and they died while they were searching for it, which I'd feel guilty about if I'd put this is a true story at the beginning of my film. Obviously, they don't because they've used it in the TV series. Matt, what did you think?
I quite enjoyed it.
Good. Mel, what did you think?
I'm torn because I want to continue watching it to see what happens to everybody, but the level of violence and blood was a little too much for me.
I had a feeling that might be the case.
It's so cute. I mean, this is such a different role for Martin Freeman. It's such a deep dive into that bumbling sort of, that character that he played like in The Office. And the accent was really
throwing. Let me try something before you carry on with that, Mel, because I want you to carry on with that. But I want you to tell me, when you were watching it, were you imagining Matt watching it?
I never imagined Matt doing anything.
I just wondered.
That's where you're going wrong, Mel. You want to imagine me a lot more.
I'm wondering if you were guessing what each other were going to say about this thing. I'm guessing Matt did think about Mel. What did you?
No, I only did about 30 seconds ago when I at the start of the podcast when I realized we were both guinea pigs. I started thinking, I wonder if Mel will have got over the violence.
Okay, so Mel, Martin Freeman, it's a deeper role for him, yeah?
Yeah, it really, really is. It's not a comfortable role to see him in because I really, really like him, but boy, he nails it. And the difference in his character from the beginning of that first episode to the end and the decisions that he's made, that's got me wondering. It's got me curious about the rest of the episodes, and I probably will watch a few more to see.
Jack, have you seen this?
Yeah, I've seen all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and I have to agree with Martin Freeman. I didn't really like him in it, to be honest. I didn't think he was... I thought they could have picked somebody better play his role, and especially, like you said, Mel, the accent and his voice. Oh my god.
Did the accent annoy you, Mel?
No, it's quite good. It's quite realistic. It was throwing me off because I've only ever heard him in British roles with his accent, his British accent. So or his, you know, his Bilbo accent. But
it is a supremely annoying accent though, isn't it?
It's
annoyed the pants off me.
Oh yeah.
It is accurate. I've been to Minnesota. That is how they talk. So
it's cute. It's cute as well, but it's also quite grating.
It's a little goes a long way.
My wife and I do it around the house to each other every now and then. Just, oh yeah, oh yeah,
oh yeah. You're in the milky bath. Matt. What did you like about this, Matthew?
What didn't I like?
What did you did?
What did I like? You know what? I was thinking it was all a bit weak, watered down Coen Brothers Fargo until about the last 15-20 minutes. Mm. Actually, no, maybe a little bit longer than that. But everything suddenly started to kick off all over the place, you know. Characters who you think are going to be, you know, series staples are suddenly dead. And it's not that I need it to, I need people to be dying all the time to enjoy a show, but it's suddenly all the stakes got raised and everything was a bit more interesting. But I can hear as well what people are saying about Martin Freeman. I think it's hard when you're expecting someone to sound a certain way and then they're doing something very different. Because obviously, I wonder whether he would have been able to fly under the radar with that if he wasn't such a recognisable actor.
A lot like Winona Ryder in Stranger Things.
Well, no, because she's not doing an accent, is she, Howell?
No, but, you know, the being the name is quite difficult and people can be annoyed by that person more easily because they know who they are.
Well, like Billy Bob Thornton and Bob Odenkirk.
Well, yeah, but never mind.
You know, if you're going to hold something up to be shot down.
No, I was...
along those lines, though, so then we have Billy Bob Thornton, who's playing every Billy Bob Thornton character ever. I mean, there's no nuance there that I can see yet.
Well, he's playing a modern Billy Bob Thornton character. Like, when Billy Bob first came out, he was just a big hairy mess.
With fake hair?
Yeah, he was just like Jack or something.
Who's Billy Bob Thornton?
Oh, Jack.
Sounds like somebody out of a fairy tale.
That's he's right. The scary man in the first episode.
Oh, right, okay. Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's the scary man.
That's a great final scene, wasn't it, by the way? The Here Be Dragons scene.
Remind me.
That was so... when
he gets pulled over.
Colin Hanks' character.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, my God. It's so scary. Will you be carrying on with it, Matt?
I think we will. I think I'm going to watch the first episode again with my wife, and we'll see if we want to carry on going.
Excellent, Mel. Will you carry on with it?
Yeah, I'm going to go through at least four episodes and see. But can you guys just give me a heads up, like how much more blood should I be expecting?
Well, I think about
lots.
Are there a lot of hammers involved? Yeah. Here?
There's a lot of death. I don't want to give you a false hope, Mel. There's violence upon violence.
Was very gruesome, that, actually, with the bullpin hammer.
Yes.
I didn't feel like we needed the shot of her face afterwards.
Do you know what? I think, Mel, that's Jamie can confirm or deny, and Jack, but I feel like that's the most shocking one out the way. And perhaps the other ones become a little more cartoon, a little more, you know.
I think so.
Yeah, I don't think it gets any worse than that.
Up until maybe the very last episode.
Can I ask something? I mean, this is my only worry about the show is, like, what's the point of this? Is this just... you know, crazy shenanigans up in a weird, quirky part of America, or is there something a bit more broad to it? A bit less broad, rather.
This is a question I've asked myself many times with the Coen brothers. I've got a bad relationship with Coen brothers films. I think.
What?
Yeah, well, I think they're, you know, this is purely it, what you've just said. I think they're excellently made, excellently acted and written. There's a part of me that always goes, like, Serious Man made me really angry because ultimately I walked out of the cinema and went, how is my life anything other than more miserable as a result of that story? They didn't give me anything. You know, it's like, what is the point? Why are we doing this? And I think the point in Coen Brothers' stuff is that it's a dark comedy and they always start with a main character who is almost always male, and they say, how much shit can we throw at one character and it still be believable? So that's their form, and it's a farce, but a really dark farce. So if you can watch it with that view of kind of going, oh, this is a story about making mistake upon mistake upon mistake, or shit being thrown at you in life. That's what it's like, the farce of life is.
Can I just stop you there?
Yeah.
Sorry, I just want to say that I think is the difference between this and a Coen Brothers film is obviously the medium.
Yeah.
And while I can understand why simply telling a yarn for a couple of hours is worthwhile if it's a good enough story.
Yeah.
Like, how I don't understand how you make it worthwhile over six, however many series there are of it.
Yeah. I mean, I have the same question about people watching EastEnders for 20 years. But it's... I think that this does give you more. And I think that there are heroes. And I think particularly that season two is one of the most surprising series that I've seen in ages. And there's something that happens. Have you seen season two, Jack, Jamie?
No, I've not watched it.
Have you, Jamie?
Yeah, I have, yeah. And I didn't like it as much as the first season, but I know that it's... Like,
did you finish it?
Yeah, I did actually. And it is very good. I just didn't enjoy it as much. I really enjoyed the first series. And I think if you're wondering why to watch it, Matt, it's because it's a brilliant piece of like television. Like when you really get into it, the characters, the journeys, and you get past Martin Freeman's... You know, I struggled with Freeman's performance, mainly because I thought he was doing an impression of William H. Macy.
That's definitely there, yeah.
In the film. And it took me a while to get over that. But once you get into it, his character is brilliant, actually. He's a really, like, complicated character. And he's really fascinating to watch the journey he goes on. And then Billy Bob's character, I know that he annoys you a bit, Mel, that he's just playing the same kind of role. Well, he does surprise you. There are surprising moments in it. Yeah. And that's what the show's really good at, is just sort of... catching you by surprise at times with the journey the characters go on, and ultimately it's a really thrilling, if at times extremely violent, journey.
You're so clever, Jamie. It's just such a shame that you've got a problem with sequels. because season two of this, I thought, again, a bit like the first one, it takes a while to get going, but there's a couple of moments in season two which I'd love to talk about. Which is so, you know, the big surprising moment in season two.
Yeah.
It kind of leaves its genre. It leaves its whole genre for 5 minutes, and there are a lot of, both in Billy Bob, in Martin, and in the production of it, there are a lot of surprises waiting for you that are much more three dimensional than you probably hope at the moment.
And it is one of those things where I know you think, you feel like, why would you need to make this? Because Fargo's a really good film. Doesn't feel like, it feels like a big ask to follow that. And the fact that the Coen brothers aren't really doing it, they're just letting someone else do it and producing, executive producing. It feels like it's a huge task that maybe doesn't need to be done. But the guy who does it is the guy's name, he puts it, is Noah Hawley, who's worked on Bones in the past and other TV shows. He does an amazing job, and he captures the essence of the Coen brothers, but he takes it in his own and in his own way and with his own voice as well. And it's really, really well done in that respect. And it's won lots of awards and Emmys, and the cast is incredible.
Yeah, and in fact, to go back to what Matt was saying off the back of my criticism of the Coen brothers, I think that the Coen brothers possibly couldn't have written and directed a full series for that reason, for the fact that, you know, they kind of get a character and run it into the ground, and you couldn't sustain that. But I think that this has more surprises and moments of magic to it, perhaps. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to remember it as anything other than quite dark and dour, though, Jamie, isn't it?
Yeah, it's extremely bleak, but it's a good contrast to something else you might be watching. You know, it's nice to watch this while you might be watching it a bit lighter, because it's got that intensity and darkness that you might want on a Saturday night to just binge watch a couple of episodes, and you do get gripped by the journey the characters go on.
Yeah, you do, and figuring out who they represent. You know, who does, what is Billy Bob representing? Is he the devil? Is he, you know, what's going on? And
he's chaos, isn't he? He represents chaos.
Potentially, but then I think the further you go in, when Tom Hanks gets involved...
Tom Hanks is in it.
Colin Hanks.
I was talking cryptically.
I was getting really excited then.
when Tom Little Hanks gets involved, I think there's some That's just some really nice stuff. Yeah, it's definitely worth.
He's not chaos, I don't think. I mean, there's a strange kind of logic to him. He's sort of, he's almost kind of representing a bit of justice as well in a weird way.
Yeah, but a very dark justice.
Maybe. Oh yeah, absolutely.
I think Mel might be right, though. I think it'd be interesting to see. I'll give that some thought.
But this whole thing starts from him sort of trying to help a guy out. In a very strange and extreme way. Well, it does. You know,
but he forces it. He forces it, and then he says, "Well, you didn't say no."
Mm.
And that's not the same thing as saying yes.
That's right.
That's his own motivations. That's finding an excuse to do something that he wants to do and say, no, you said, because we had that whole scene with, I cannot come up with names right now, but with Martin Friedman's character and the shotgun when he's waiting for Billy Bob to come to his house.
Yeah.
You killed her. And, you know, kind of turning it around on him, what he said earlier about the Sam Hess character. And it's, I don't know. I will keep watching and see if Billy Bob's character changes. But for right now, that's from that first episode. He just seems very self-motivated and in love with chaos.
I have to say that I'd watched all of the first season, going back to what you were saying about the film. And then I tried to watch the film and didn't find it as good as I thought it was going to be.
Wow, that is interesting.
Why? I thought the first season was a lot better. And I don't know if that was because I was expecting too much from the film, maybe, or because I just got used to the characters. I know you're saying there's the crossover.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's hard. A TV series could be better than the film. But then when you carry a massive bag of expectations into something, you set yourself up for a loss, don't you, Jamie?
It's very difficult to it's very difficult to compare across the mediums as well, because they have such different tools at their disposal.
Jack, did you get the link after watching the film? Did you get the link chronologically to the TV show? Yeah.
At first, I just presumed, because I knew there was the film had been brought out before the TV show, and when I was watching the TV show, I just presumed the links I didn't understand were to the film. And then when I watched it, it made sense, but I don't know. If I'd have watched it the other way around, it would be interesting to see if I'd prefer the film to the TV show.
Well, I mean, like Matt said, it is hard to judge different mediums in some respect, but like I kind of wonder if I prefer the TV show a little bit more after watching it to the film. Like, if I had a choice, maybe I would go with the TV show, because I really did enjoy it. And I know that you might be put off, Mel, by the sort of monsterish character of Billy Bob and the violence. But there are some really interesting characters in there. It's a really interesting journey that the story takes you on. I think you will enjoy it if you stick with it.
You know, the genius of Billy Bob Thornton is that he creeps me out, and I don't like his characters, but I still want to watch.
Yeah.
So he's not a deal breaker for me.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, crack on. And I urge you, if you can find a cinema with Ghostbusters, just purely to add your opinion to the mix. That would be good.
All right, I'll do what I can.
I'm only having a go, Jamie, because I was so upset that you missed out on so many laughs.
Now, see, isn't season 2, series 2 of Fargo, isn't Kirsten Dunst the lead?
Yes.
Therefore,
that's a problem, isn't it?
Maybe doesn't care for it. Because she's a woman.
There you
go. So there's a woman in the lead, therefore...
God damn it, I love the ladies.
Yeah.
You know what, I watched Bridesmaids again recently. I think that must be the fifth time I've watched that film.
Oh, what
fucking
a film.
Love it.
What a film. I loved it too.
When they're the wedding dress and the bridesmaid dress. That's
amazing.
I cannot control myself. I cry with laughter when she sort of stumbles like a kind of weird looking duck into the street.
Yes.
It's just too funny. It's too funny.
I disrupted an entire restaurant. howling with laughter when one of my nieces brought that up.
Really?
Yeah.
She just gets lower, doesn't she, to the ground.
Oh, God.
And she's just going, oh, my God, it's happening.
It's happening.
I'm shitting in the street.
Thanks, everybody. Have a lovely, sunny rest of the week.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Jamie, wait there a minute. I'm going to get rid of everyone else. No, Jack, you can stay. Quick,
all right, okay.
Quick moment of spoiler.
Okay, for Fargo.
For Fargo. Oh, right. Quick moment. Okay, if you've not seen Fargo, turn off now. If you've not seen Fargo, turn off now. The woodchopper. He's putting the bits. He's putting the body into the woodchopper.
No, that's not the link. That might be a sort of thematic nod to the original film, but the actual, you know, the character of Oliver Platt's, you know, the character in season one of the guy who owns the big supermarket.
Yeah.
He tells his story at some point in one of the episodes about how he came across the money to afford to buy his business. Do you remember that bit?
He found it in the snow because he found the
picture of the snow scraper, doesn't he? He actually has it framed somewhere.
Yeah.
In reference to the actual
film.
But
have I imagined somebody burying that in it as well?
He does go back and bury it, doesn't he, the money?
Yeah.
Maybe you're right, yeah. You might be right. I can't remember what happened at the end now.
And then the woodchopper. You see, that's why it kind of, it's almost both a homage and following on consecutively. It's weird.
Because
it's a shocking coincidence if somebody else uses a woodchopper to dispose of a body, isn't it? I don't know. Weird. Anyway, that'll do.
Cool.
Thanks
Who's
for showing.
Next? Are you back next week, Jack?
I will be.
Great.
Okay.
Great.
Good stuff.
Show up and bring a better attitude next time.